Hey, 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 Closet Busters, come on and gather around. It's time once again to kick down those closet doors of life. We're here to escape our BS, explore our fears, and elevate our self-expression. I'm your host, Rick Clemens, bold move expert and coming out coach, and I'm going to take you to the party, the pulpit, the wake, and back to the party of living your life uncloseted. So come on, grab hold of yourself and get ready to step out, step up, and step in to living your truth as we explore more stories, tips, and tricks for living your life uncloseted. Now let's get to the show. Hey there, closet busters and bold move makers. It's time once again for You Know What? Life Uncloseted, where we say, screw it, we're kicking down the doors. We are going to go through those closet doors of our life. We are going to set ourselves free and live boldly, live uncloseted lives without any freaking apologies. And I'm not sure you're going to really get this one until we get into it, but sometimes a hot dog can have everything to do with living your life uncloseted. In fact, sometimes it can have such freaking impact that you suddenly find yourself doing stuff, walking away from knob heads in your life, and really making some bold moves that make you, well, kind of step into stuff you never thought possible. And today I'm bringing a guy onto the podcast who I've come to like, except he still hasn't bought me the whiskey he keeps promising me he's going to buy me. But he has become a great friend. He's a great mentor, kind of a partner in crime. And he's really, truly been behind a lot of what Life Uncloseted has become. His name is Mark Asquith. He's a Brit, so don't hold that against him. But he's going to just kind of share. Well, he and I are just going to rap today because he knows my brand and Life Uncloseted and coming out and bold move making probably as good as I do. And he's going to share some of his own coming out journeys of business and life and everything. So let's just cut the shit and move forward. So welcome to the podcast, buddy.
Yo, yo, yo. I don't know what you're going to pull me up on when I buy you the whiskey. After that, I don't know what I'm going to have to promise you something else.
Yeah, you're going to have to promise me something else for dang sure. Because, yeah. It's always going to be our thing. But then once you buy it for me, I'm going to be like, okay, what else can I pull on him at this point? So
I do take responsibility for that. The whiskey wholeheartedly.
Yes, you should. And I don't really like whiskey, so I'm just giving you shit. You know that.
So. I do indeed. Although I didn't like wine, and then you got me onto that.
So maybe the reverse is going to happen here. But so let's dive in, man. I mean, let's really kind of answer this question about the hot dog, the sausage, all this stuff, because everything really that you are doing now came from a pivotal closet moment in your life, pretty much.
Yeah, I didn't even realize I was in a closet. So, you know, the closet's a funny one. I didn't realize I was in the closet, and then it's a funny one because this hot dog incident kind of put me in the closet, and then I didn't get out of it until I didn't realize I was out of it, and then I didn't realize why I was out of it. It's like this really convoluted mess, so I'll explain. I've told this story a thousand times. I think it was, 10 years old. Went to this school disco here in the UK. It was the last school disco, I think, before we went to secondary school. So when you're 11 here in the UK, you jump up to the big school and, you learn about life, apparently. And this last disco, I turned up and, I was maybe 10. No, in fact, I must have been 11. And that's just around the time that you start to just notice that you kind of want to impress people. Like there was this girl that I was like, oh, okay. I don't know why. I don't understand why I want to make sure that she does not think I'm a dick. But there's some part of my little 11-year-old brain that's like, no, Mark, you're not dancing to Michael Jackson. You're going to look cool. All right. Because if you dance to Michael Jackson, she might think you're a dick. That's the setup. So I was quite a shy kid at school, quite a grey kid. You know, I didn't really have too many friends, maybe four or five good quality friends around me, and we used to hang around. So we turned up to the disco, and we're having a good time. You know, surprisingly, it's going well. And we're just chatting, and everyone's having a good time and doing what you do at 11 years old, running around, skidding around on your knees and being cool. And someone suggested going to get some food. So you walk into this little kind of area where they've set up all these different tables and working down this production line from grabbing a quick drink and whatever down to getting some food, these hot dogs. So we all went down, skipped the queue and went down to this hot dog section. Now there's me right in the center, and to one side of me, to my left, there's all my friends moving down the queue. And to the right of me is this girl, Kirsty, and then her friend. So I'm next to her. Total serendipitous chance. You know, complete potluck. I couldn't believe it. So anyway, I'm too busy trying to impress her, you know, talking crap and, well, you know me, talking shit. And, you know, having a good time, that I didn't see what was going on in front of me. I didn't see what was happening. All I saw was that these people were getting hot dogs. You know, my friend Scott was getting a hot dog. Martin got a hot dog. Andrew got a hot dog. Pete got a hot dog. So I get there and I'm like, oh, hot dog, please. And so she said, there's your hot dog. She literally gave me the hot dog before saying the next bit. And she was like, oh, that's 50 pence. What? What do you mean? 50? I've got to pay for this thing. Now, I come from a really kind of poor background. We didn't have any much cash as I was a kid. There was no spare cash. You know, any kind of trips that we went on kind of caused arguments between my parents because, you know, one of them always wanted us to go. The other one didn't at any given time because the cash was such a pressure.
Yeah.
Really, you know, really feel for my parents looking back at it. And the symptom of that then became that these school discos didn't have any cash just because I didn't have any. I literally didn't have a penny. So I had to give in front of everyone. Everyone. I had to give this hot dog back. And bear in mind, I'm stood next to the crush that I want to impress that very, very much. And I was just like distraught. I was just completely at that point. It's like someone did a complete drop kick on me and kicked me straight into a closet that is just, and the wall was cash. You know, so I had to give this hot dog back, felt humiliated, embarrassed, felt shy, never wanted to see anyone again, wanted to leave. It was awful. Worst feeling ever. And I didn't realize it, but that kind of put me in this closet where I wouldn't do anything that meant that money could control me. And for the longest time, what I did was I went about this in the wrong way. And up until being about 23 or 24, I was kind of in this closet. And I would do things that didn't risk the little bit of cash that I was earning from a shitty job. You know, I was in a crappy little job, like an office job, hated the thing. But I was earning like 12 grand a year, honestly, and this is in 2000 and 2001. So I was in this closet, scared to death of this kind of bit of money that I got and this really slow career path where you get 1% raise, but you've got to disproportionately work to get that grand a year.
Right.
You know, I was in this closet and I couldn't get out of it. I didn't even know I was in it. I thought, well, this is just how you do things. And then two things happened. I'm really close to my grandparents and to my grandmother at this particular conversation. I remember saying to her, you know what? Work is shit. I'm really bored of it. It's crap. And she said, well, no one likes the job, do they? You just do it. I'm like, what? Okay. That's quite an antiquated way of looking at things, but I kind of get it because my granddad was a miner. He went down the pit.
Yep.
You know, he was covered in black coal dust all the time, came out. He was knackered, couldn't do anything. But at the weekend, he got his time and he could spend his money. So that was one thing. The second thing that happened was that I left one corporate job. So I was working at a pensions company and I left that job. And I went from one city up in Leeds, which is about 25 minutes from my house, down to Sheffield, which is where I am now, ironically, down to Sheffield. And I thought to myself, do you know what? I'm earning a couple of grand extra per year, but I'm going to be so excited because it's going to be a new job. There's going to be new challenges. It's going to be fulfilling.
All right.
And I got there. And the guy gave me the same shit to do that I've been doing at the last job. And I said to myself, I remember I was on the phone to my dad. I said, you know what? I can feel myself being depressed by this and getting the same dread that I used to feel when I had to have any money conversation or when there was a bill coming up that I couldn't pay or when I was worried about, oh shit, the car's going to break down and I can't afford to get it fixed. Like that same dread gray feeling that was weighing on me started to weigh on me on a Sunday night when I was going into work. And I swapped my job. And on the day that he gave me that same task, I said to myself, look, this is like me putting my pen down in Leeds and picking it back up in Sheffield. It's the same crap. And I've sold out. I've sold out 40 hours of my week for an extra 2 grand a year. What is this shit? And it was that point that I realized that I was in this closet. It was that point that I realized that the reason I'd done it was because I was scared to death of going back to feeling how I felt when I had to give the hot dog back. This control of, if I don't have cash, then I have no control. Someone will take it away from me. And without money, I have got no say in my life. I've got no you know, I didn't realize I was in it until I decided not to do that shit anymore. So that day I went in and I gave him a note. He said, look, his name was Graham. Lovely guy. I said, Graham, I've been here 3 hours. I'm leaving. I'm not coming back. I won't be here tomorrow. And I've only been here 3 hours, so I'm not letting anyone down. And he said, well, what are you doing? I said, I have no idea. No idea, but I am not ever doing this again. And that was maybe 12 years ago, 13 years ago. And that, you know, that was the first closet that I've broken out of. You know, there's a bigger picture closet as well, which is the whole personality thing. And how do you actually, what the hell do you do after that? But dude, I didn't even realize I was in the closet. That thing, that one thing when I was 11, it, like I said, it's like someone just, you know, imagine like a bungee rope tied to your back and it just pulling you away.
Right.
It was like someone had done that and pulled me into this closet that I couldn't get out of. And I didn't even realize.
I think that's what happens to most people, though. And you and I have talked about this numerous times as we've worked on my stuff and, you know, bringing Life Uncloseted to being, is as we come out of these closets, the first light bulb is truly, I didn't even realize I was in this closet. Now, some people may. I mean, the coming out journey alone, you know, sexuality and all that, you kind of know you're in a closet because you know who you want to be, but the reality is you don't really realize how deep you are in it until that moment you say, this isn't going to work for me any longer. And then you're like, wow, I've been holding myself back. And as you were talking, everything that was going through my head is, this is a perfect example of, I don't even know I'm in this space, because we become so freaking comfortable, numb, used to doing the habit of being in this closet that we can't do anything else.
Yeah, 100%. And I think the other side of it as well is that you're scared to death.
Absolutely.
And I think one of the big things that, you know, I was 23, 24 when I quit my job, and I was just total potluck. Like, you know me, I'm a talker. I can kind of blag my way where I want, or so right. I could when I was younger. I could, you know, I didn't have any qualifications. I left college because it was boring. Like, this is another thing that you know about me. I don't do anything that bores me.
Right.
So I was, you know, I worked for my dad for 2 months, and my dad's an electrician, and I went out with him and I thought, well, wait a second. Okay. So he's just going to pay me cash. Mm-hmm. And I'd saved up for a holiday with the lads, and I'd saved up in record time, and I was working less and earning more. I was like, how's my dad doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And the way he was doing it was just by being fucking nice to people. Like, he's an electrician. Mm-hmm. Anyone can put a socket in. If you qualified for it, you qualified for it. You know, it's that simple. But he was just being really nice to people. He was helping people. He was communicating really well. He was telling people when he wasn't going to turn up because he got a flat tire or a job had run on. He was actually telling people, and no other spark, he did that. And I was like, okay, there's something interesting here. And I blagged my way into a job, because this is where the other closet comes in. Or not the other closet, but the other part of the closet comes in. I blagged my way into a job. Bear in mind, I was earning 18 grand a year.
Mm-hmm.
Within 4 months, I went on to earn 140 grand a year. Mm. And then within 6 months after that, I was on 210 grand a year.
Mm.
And I was doing that by contracting. I was a freelance digital trainer and a project manager and business change analyst. And this is at 23.
Wow.
I was earning like 200K a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I quit doing that. Because the reason was, this is where I think it becomes really interesting. I thought the closet was money,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't. The closet was control.
Mm.
And the point is that I had all that cash, and I did all right with it. And I used a bit of that cash to set up my first business, which I then squandered. That, you know, that's a hell of another story. But it was control. These guys that were paying me this crazy amount of money, they told me where to be and when to be there. I was like, whoa, this is not, no way. This is not happening. And I quit doing that as well. So I think the point that I'm getting to there is that you actually, a lot of the time, what you think is stopping you
mm-hmm.
isn't stopping you. It's something a little bit deeper. It's something that you've perhaps not even got to it yet. Mm-hmm. You don't understand it. You can't figure out why you fixed this thing, or you feel like you're living your life in a way that's genuine. But actually, you're not. You're still a little bit away from it, but you don't know why. You can't, you know, what's that thing that's not quite mm-hmm. aligning?
But this happens all the time in the coming out world. I mean, and I do mean coming out world. You know, those of you that are listening, you know, we've migrated from being the coming out lounge, where it was very LGBTQ focused, and we still tell those stories. But the reason we're doing this is because there's a whole world out there that people are coming out of. And what Mark's talking about is this thing that you suddenly realize, okay, and I'm going to use a couple of, you know, clients as examples where, okay, I'm gay, or I realize I'm bi, but actually what's going on is I'm in a relationship that actually isn't working on so many other fronts. And as I discover, oh, this is the thing I think I am, whether it's gay, bi, whatever, it becomes the focus. But underneath that focus is all the other shit that isn't right with the relationship. And when you discover this stuff, so as Mark said, he discovered it was control. Money was in the mix of the closet. And this is so interesting because I know many of you have heard me talk about what's in your closet is what's going to help you get out of your closet. What was in Mark's closet was this money thing and a hot dog story and this feeling of having to impress somebody and boredom. All that stuff is in his closet. But actually what you're starting to hear is what brought him out of the closet was he wanted to control his destiny. He didn't want somebody else telling him when to show up, when to be where, all this sort of stuff. And this is where I think it's very fascinating. When we start to unlock the freaking closet door and we go, what the fuck is actually inside this closet that's really going on? That's when the magic starts to happen.
And I think a really interesting point there as well is to recognize that, you know, you've expanded from the LGBTQ kind of side of things and move it into what's keeping people in their own closets, what are they doing across their entire life, you know, across the whole spectrum. Yep. But one of the interesting things is that I don't think a lot of us recognize that we build our own. We do build our own closets.
You know, absolutely.
Looking at the old business that I was in, the Hacksaw biz, you build this place that you've got to turn up to. You build this place that actually becomes controlling of you because you build it in such a way that people expect certain things from you at certain times. And, you know, you set yourself up in whatever endeavor in life, whether it's a personal choice, whether it's a business choice, whatever it is, you make those choices based on how you are at that time and kind of roughly where you think you want to go in the near future. You rarely base any of that stuff on how you actually want to live, you know, on how you want to feel. And so you do build all of these little different kinds of walls up around you. And then you don't understand why you're still pissed off.
Yep.
Like, why? I've done this thing that everyone said you should do. Why am I still pissed? Why am I still annoyed? Why am I still not feeling this? You know, what's, and then you start thinking, well, what the hell's wrong with me? What have I done wrong? Everyone else seems happy because look, social media.
Right, exactly.
You know, so you do put these up around. It's like we've all got these portable walls that we're carrying around, and every 5 years or so, we look at them and go, oh shit, they're back, you know?
Yeah, but you just said something too that I think is part of the, you know, it's all part of the mix, but this one is a kind of a biggie, is I'm pissed off. And we say, okay, well, this is why I think I'm pissed off, but we don't really get into the depths of, oh, wait, what's really in the pissed off? We can go to the surface stuff like, okay, Mark pissed me off today because it's something he said, so I'm going to be pissed off. But what's actually underneath that? It isn't just what Mark said, because tomorrow it's going to be what Joe said or what, you know, Sally said or what Sam says. And each time we get into that pissed off place, if we dive deeper, underneath that is what's in the closet of why we're pissed off. And then suddenly we become so numb to just getting pissed off because of what's on the surface. We don't explore deeper. We don't get to that deeper answer. And then we're stuck in this closet of always being pissed off, when actually if we dove a little bit deeper and kind of excavated it out, we can probably quit being pissed off, because what's pissing us off isn't what's on the surface. It's something much, 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 much deeper.
Yeah, you do. And you fix the symptoms. You know, let's use relationships as an example. You fix the symptoms. You're not happy in a relationship, so you go fuck around.
Right.
And that's fixing a symptom. That's not getting to the underlying problem, which is you're probably not with the right person. Mm-hmm. You know, people stop at that. People go, well, we're not with the right person, so actually we'll try and sort that out, or, you know, whatever. But people never go deeper insofar as why, what in particular is just not gelling. And people kind of do this shotgun approach. You know, they'll go total nuclear, and they'll try and solve problems by undertaking these big gestures. Mm-hmm. You know, they'll forsake all other things to focus on one thing, whether that's work or relationships. And like life just doesn't work like that, because if it did, no one would do anything. No one would do anything else. So you can't break out of your closet by shotgunning through the lock and just hoping that it doesn't catch up with you. You know, something's going to chase you out the door. Mm-hmm. You've got to turn around and face it, keep the door locked for a while until you understand what is in there that you need to deal with. And mm-hmm. people don't do that.
One of the most compelling experiences I had in this was right after I started coaching. I had a young guy who was really struggling with his sexuality, and he was getting very frustrated, and he was trying to accept himself. And I said, if you were to come out of the closet today, what would you do? And he goes, what do you mean, what would I do? I said, what would you do? Who would you be? How would you act? What would you do to, you know, make this known that this is who you are? And it was like what you just said. He suddenly came up with this grand gesture of what he'd do. And I said, okay, great. So that's what you're going to do. And he talked about, you know, I'd go to every Pride festival. I'd be my, you know, myself. And I said, okay, and what'd you do if you didn't make the grand gesture? And he didn't know what to say. And I said, the only thing you need to do to come out of the closet is be yourself. Now, if that grand gesture is you being yourself, great. But I could tell by what he was describing, he was stepping right back into another closet of, okay, if I'm going to be gay and I'm going to come out, this is what I believe I'm supposed to do when I'm gay. And I think this is the problem we all step into. We step into our own shit all the time when we do this of, okay, well, I'm going to go be an entrepreneur. Or I'm going to get out of this relationship that's no good for me. So when you get out of a relationship that's no good for me, then this is how somebody else does it that did it. And before we know it, we're mimicking so closely what somebody else did, we're right back in another closet instead of going and saying, if I want to be out of a relationship, how do I want to be out of a relationship? If I want to be an entrepreneur, how do I want to be an entrepreneur? And these are the things I think most people miss when they say, this is how I want to be myself.
And, you know, one of the interesting things as well, one of the big secrets of life, genuinely, and this is going to sound, it's going to sound like a negative, but it's actually a massive positive. One of the biggest secrets to life, and I think you discover this when you're in your 30s, because you're probably a little bit more comfortable with yourself. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest lessons that everyone can learn right now today is that, honestly, no one gives a shit. No one gives a shit. Like, if you come out of the closet, yeah, you've got some family to deal with, okay, that's a little different. But you know what? 99% of people in your life, they do not care what you do. As long as one, you're happy or you seem happy. Mm-hmm. Two, you're not hurting them in any way. They do, mm-hmm. honestly, they do not care. Okay. No one cares. You could tell, like, I had a friend, right? And it's long been debated whether he's bisexual or not. And we're like, well, like, it doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. And you could tell it was on him. You know, it was on him. He was under a little bit of pressure. It's almost self-deprecating, some of the jokes that he'd make about it. And you're like, look, all right. And we were sat at a wedding once. And we're all sat around a big round table. And we were just having a drink and whatever. And we were just having a laugh, saying stuff. And, you know, literally just having a laugh about all sorts of different topics. And just out of the blue, from nowhere, he said, oh, lads, by the way, I'm bisexual. And everyone just went, yeah, okay, do you want another drink?
Right.
Like, no one cares. Mm-hmm. No one cares, because this thing that you build up in your mind has been this huge, giant, world-ending thing. It's just another step. It's just another mm-hmm. part of the journey. It's just another brick in the path. You know, it's not, no one honestly cares. Well, if you think well, about the line.
If they do care, it has nothing to do with you.
No.
It has them. Everything to do with them. And this is, I know people have heard me say this numerous times on this podcast, and I've actually had some email debates with people about it. It's like, well, it can't just be all about them. I'm like, it is, because if you're, okay, it isn't if you're letting it get to you. But the moment you don't let what they think get to you, it then becomes all about them, because you move on. You move on with your life. You say, I'm going to quit my job. I'm going to go start a business. I know it's a risk. I'm going to sell my house. I'm going to get rid of everything I have except what will fit into this backpack and this one duffel bag and go travel the world. I'm going to say this relationship isn't working, even though everybody else thinks, oh my God, they're such a great couple, but I'm miserable and I'm going to be real honest with you. I like you. I care about you, but we know this isn't working, so let's do it. It is only about you as long as you allow it to be about you and take in what somebody else is giving you. The minute you release it, it's all about them.
Definitely. People project their own crap. You've only got to look at Twitter these days for every,
absolutely,
you know, all the shit that people are peddling about, you know, the kind of state of politics and all that kind of stuff. It's very, very dividing. You've only got to look at most of the people that are peddling anything that's even mildly racist or homophobic. Basically, like, what are they afraid of? Mm-hmm. What are they afraid of? Because some shit's gone on with them. Something's happened and they are not handling it. And
that is actually my favorite question to ask somebody. So, and I've done it for years. Anybody who's been very homophobic, I have literally looked numerous people in the eyes and said, what are you afraid of by having this conversation with me? Or what are you afraid of by me being gay? And most of the time, they cannot answer that question because they immediately deflect. Well, you know, this is what okay, I get that's what you think the Bible says. I get that. But what are you afraid of? What are you afraid of that my life is going to do to you? And what it is they are afraid that somehow what I'm doing is going to affect their life, but they can never come to how it's going to affect their life. It's amazing. And I think this is, for most people, this is the big, big, big speed bump in these kind of conversations, is they can't actually articulate how you being a podcaster and leaving your job, or you leaving the relationship, or you and I deciding this doesn't work. Most people can't really truly articulate how this is actually going to affect them.
Because it never does. They're all just scared. Mm-hmm. You know, people always say to me, oh, you know, I don't know how you do what you do. And I'm like, I don't know how I'd not do what I do. All I do every single day is have fun.
Yep.
That is it. And I know that sounds super cliched and everyone says it, but genuinely, I turn up, I'm like, okay, today I'm probably going to work 14, 15 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't mind that, because next week I can go to a conference. Do whatever. And, you know, I can go and sunbathe for a bit before the conference, or do whatever and have a bit of downtime. But people do only see the positives. People only see the whole, well, you're so lucky that you get to travel, or you get to talk to people, or you get to take all these pictures on Instagram and do all this stuff. And you're like, well, if you were just afraid of what it would take to get you to be able to do the things that you think I'm doing any better than you.
Mm-hmm.
You're just afraid of the fact that you might have to have a bit of uncertainty for a little bit. I was talking about it with my brother yesterday. He's in a bit of a quandary with certain things. And I gave him a very clear path of what to do to fix it. Like, it's total, absolute logic. Just do this thing. You know, he's wanting to move from one position in a job to another position. I said, just do these things. And he was like, well, why should I have to do that? I was like, what? Wait a sec. You want this thing, and you're saying, why should I have to do that? No, let's be clear. You don't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But you then have no right to complain about not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Life, you can't work life both ways, you know. And people are so closeted by everything that they do, whether that's the fact that, you know, I can't take my family to Disneyland. Why not? Just stop spending money on shit cable TV for 6 months.
Exactly. It's like there's so many options to do what you want to do. And it's amazing when you nut it down and simplify it. In fact, honestly, Mark and I were just in our mastermind for the week. And that was kind of the challenge you put in front of all of us, is, okay, what are you doing? And how can you simplify it down to get what you want to get done this year? And I was really watching faces in the group, because you and I have had this conversation over the last couple of weeks. And you know where I'm going with what I'm doing. But it's the more I simplify, and even my move to my new house kind of instigated this whole change in me of, how do I simplify things to get the one thing I wanted? My move to my house was, I want a simpler life. I want an easier way of being in the world. I want less in my life going on. But people have a hard time getting here because they don't want to go try to find, okay, what do you do? How do you do this? How do you make it simple? How do you get rid of cable or whatever for, you know, 6 months so you can go to Disneyland? They just don't know how to get there.
They don't. And they're a little bit scared of it as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right. What am I going to do if I don't have cable TV? Then what do I do in the evenings? I don't know. What the fuck are you going to go do? Take a walk. Mm. Spend time with your kids. Get online and figure out what's the cheapest way to get to Disneyland. There's so many things you can do when you start to eliminate stuff. In fact, in the conversation this morning, I know I'm not going to get it exactly right, but, you know, Mark was actually challenging us to look at what is it that we actually do. And all of you who listen to this podcast, you know, it's about unclosing your life and making bold moves. But then Mark said, what Rick really does is he enables people to do the thing they want to do without fear. I think that was kind of where you went with it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's really the nuts and bolts of it. We can put uncloseted on it. We can put coming out. We can put making a bold move. But what I help people do, no matter what it is make the thing happen you want to do without fear. Plain and simple. But if I said that to somebody and said, well, here's what I'm going to help you do. I'm going to help you do what you want to do without fear. They're going to get so scared. So you got to walk into this stuff. You got to dance into it in a way that you go, okay, I know I'm scared, but what's on the other side of scared? What's on the other side of when this thing is done? And I think that's what you've shown in this conversation is when you step through, when you see what's in your closet and you push through it, you actually begin to reap the rewards. That's the bottom line.
It is, yeah. And people don't realize how easy stuff is. Like, there's nothing hard unless it's truly hard. Like, getting through cancer is hard.
Yes.
Changing jobs, quitting your job, believe me, the amount of time and the amount of communications and correspondence and process and red tape that you have got to go through to get kicked out of your house so because you can't pay the mortgage almost makes it impossible to get kicked out of your house.
Yeah.
Because you see it coming from that far away. You just, like, they send you a letter. Why have you missed your mortgage payment this month? Oh, shit, that's sign number one. Then they'll do that at least three more times. And then they'll, you know, they walk you through a process. They want their money back. They're not going to kick you out. They don't want to do that. So why not take the risk? And it's because you're not scared of anything except what other people are going to think. I told my mum that I was, when I quit my job, and she was like, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. And she was like, oof, that's a bit risky. I was like, yeah, but look, worst case scenario, I just get this job again, don't I?
Mm-hmm.
What's the worst that can happen? You get the job that you are currently doing. Because you can always get that job.
I said that to a young man I was talking to last week who had contacted me about, you know, starting to work on his journey coming out. And he goes, I'm so scared. And I said, absolutely. It's a scary thing. I said, but what scares you the most? Well, I'm afraid of what my parents are going to think. And I said, and then once you know what they think, then what? And it got really quiet on the other end of the line. I said, and once you're out of the closet, then what? You have said who you are. Well, what if they reject me? And what if they do reject you? It's one of those things that we throw all the barriers up that we've heard everybody else say, but you've got to get to the bottom line of what it means for you. If they reject you, what is that thing that's going to happen? But even when you get to the bottom, when you get right to that bottom answer, I think what most people are going to discover is it isn't as big as we want to make it to be.
No, it's definitely not. And I always, when I'm faced with big decisions, I just ask a really simple question. When I get to 95, hopefully, and I'm laid on my deathbed looking back, what am I going to regret most? Which version of this decision am I going to regret the most?
Yep.
Things become really easy then. Things become really, really easy because you're just like, okay, of course. I don't want to live like this forever. I am not gonna regret a tiny little pinprick of pain for a lifetime of never feeling that kind of pain again. It's like you get a flu vaccination so you don't catch the flu. It's a tiny bit of pain.
Yep.
For the longest version of not having pain. It's a no-brainer. Yes, it's scary, but then so is going to the dentist, and so was that first time you got in the car, or the first time you jumped off the diving board, or the first podcast interview you did, or the first time you went out on a date. That was all scary, but you look back now and you think, well, this is, you know, that came and went.
Nothing.
Yes, it is what it is, you know?
Exactly. So before we wrap up here, and you kind of just brought a real value bomb there, but for the people who are like, okay, I get it. I need to come out of this closet. It's the thing I need to do. And then the next thing you know, they're going to say is, but. What would you tell someone who is right at the stage of, but what would you say to move them forward?
I'd ask them that question, you know, which version of this decision are you going to regret the most? That's always the thing that I'd really leave them with. But on a smaller level, because emotions are tough, you know, the way that we feel right now can really cloud what we're doing and the way that we think. They always say don't make decisions after any kind of big trips or any kind of holidays or whatever. Don't make any big decisions. So I would ask them, how do you want to feel?
Mm-hmm.
in a year, in 2 years, in 5 years? Describe how you want to feel. Do you want to feel that levity, that brightness, that lightness? Or do you want to feel that darkness, that kind of overbearing grayness that you know it's like? You feel like you're always kind of, you're not quite got your eyes fully open. Would you want to feel that, or do you want to feel this lightness? Do you want to feel like you are able to be where you want and talk to who you want? Ask how you want to feel. Because no one thinks like that. They think, what do I want to do? What's the next task I've got to get done? What's the next challenge? But no one pursues how they want to feel. So ask yourself that.
Yeah. I remember it's been well over a year since we started working together. And I remember when we started this. So here's just a short little backstory before we wrap up here. I hired Mark to help me with my podcast website, to help me kind of get focused on what my podcast was going to be. And it's amazing because a year and a half later, we've actually done huge stuff. And he said to me, what do you want to feel? And then his next question was, I think we actually need to look at the overall brand. And as he said that, then he also said, and when we look at the overall brand, I want to know what Rick wants to feel when his brand is being truly who Rick is. And it's the same question I bring to all my clients. I know you want to come out of the closet, but when you're out of the closet, what do you want to feel? And for me, it's really come to manifestation that me being in my brand, being who I'm meant to be, doing what I'm meant to do, helping people make bold moves, live uncloseted lives, all the catchphrases we use, it makes me feel free and relaxed and content. That's what this is all about for me. And that's what I hope, as you listen to this podcast, you start to see the light bulbs go off in your own heads of making a bold move, living a life uncloseted, is actually about you stepping forward and being exactly who you're meant to be without any apologies. Does that sound about right, Mark?
That sounds perfect, sir. Couldn't have articulated it better myself.
Yeah. So, all right, buddy. Well, I appreciate you being here with us. We're not going to hold it against you that you're a bloody Brit or that you haven't bought me whiskey, because I know that's coming one of these days, but I appreciate you. Love you, man. And thanks for sharing yourself so honestly and just completely out of the closet. There'll be all sorts of ways to connect with Mark. And let me tell you this, if you need somebody on your team to help you really start to see your brand, your business and everything, whether you're a podcaster or someone else, Mark is that guy. Love him dearly. And yes, he paid me quite a bit of pounds to say that for him. But anyway, thanks for being here, bro, with me today. I really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure, man. I love you back. Thank you.
All right, there you have it. Another episode of Life Uncloseted has come to an end, but that's okay. We're going to be back in just a couple of days sharing more stories, tips, tricks, and wisdom for helping you live your life uncloseted. And you know what? You can share it too. Just take a few moments if you like and if you believe in this podcast and share it with someone you know today. Share it from your phone, go share it on iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you are. Maybe even give us a rating and review, because you know what? It's all about the planet living their life uncloseted. I'm Rick Clemens, host of the show and the guy who helps you make those big, bold moves. And I hope you never stop stepping out, stepping up, and stepping in to living your life uncloseted. Catch you real soon. Take care, everyone.